Sarah Hyde, special edition number 5. Get excited, because we are going to be talking about the definitive origin story of one of the greatest comic book characters of all time. Yeah, that's right, we're going to be talking about X-Men Origins Wolverine today.
Something was coming, but I was like, where is she going with this?
Yes. No, of course we're not going to be talking about the atrocity that is X-Men Origins Wolverine. No, we are going to be talking about Deadpool, who did show up for the first time in that movie, but we'll get to that in a little bit. As you can...
He did have a cameo or two. So.
Yeah, yeah. So, as you can hear, I'm not alone, but as always, I'm Danya, and I'm joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
And we have Hero Hype veterans, Karen and Kristen, with us.
Hi.
Hello.
I like being a veteran of Hero Hype.
Yeah, well, you've been on a few episodes. Kristen's been on an episode before, so there we go.
We're veterans.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Deadpool. Deadpool. Or Skull Poople, if you are part of the Deadpool marketing team. But obviously, guys, if you listen to this episode and you want to talk to us about anything that we've said, you can get hold of us, as always, on our Twitter account, which is Hero Hype Podcast, or you can email us, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. Right, let's just get straight into it. Deadpool is a very different superhero movie than what we've been used to.
What?
I know, right? I mean,
and it was pretty derivative, I mean.
What did we think? Did we enjoy it? Was it successful? Was it what we were expecting? What did you love about this film? Or what didn't you love about this film? Caitlin, let's start with you.
I loved 96.5% of the things about this movie, approximately. I thought it was great. It was basically everything I was expecting it to be based on the marketing. And I thought it was enjoyable, but I have my issues with the way Vanessa was handled at the end of the movie, but we'll get there.
Karen, how about you?
I really liked it. I thought it was a really fun movie. It was pretty much exactly what I was expecting in that lots of people are going to die and there are going to be a lot of dick jokes. And that's essentially what the movie is. And I was totally okay with that. I really liked it. However, my biggest issue is that they used a lot of the jokes in the trailers, like some of the best jokes in the trailers. And so they just totally fell flat for me in the theater, and I didn't even laugh. That could be my own fault, because I watched the trailers approximately 1,000 times, so definitely just me. But the parts that I didn't see coming were absolutely hilarious, and I really, really liked it.
I think I most enjoyed the fourth wall breaking, but not like the egregious fourth wall breaks where he would like look at the camera and start talking. I love the stuff like the McAvoy Stewart jokes and the behind the scenes. You don't necessarily understand it unless you've seen the other movies and seen like the X-Men world. And so I quite enjoyed all of that. But yeah, it was just a overall fun trip to the movies.
I'll agree with that. I went with a friend of mine pretty much the day it came out, and I think I mentioned this on the last episode of Hero Hype as well, that the cinema that I usually go to is dead, like, all the time. You barely get anyone there. When I went to see Ant-Man, I was literally the only person in that screen, and that wasn't unusual. This cinema is, like, dead. There were, like, 10-15 people in the screen, which pretty much is the equivalent of a sold-out screen. So, it was really, really cool to have, like, other people around me watching it, because you could see that some of them probably weren't fans, because it was like it looked like dates, Valentine's Day dates, and a couple of like groups of people. There were two guys who had Deadpool t-shirts on, and then there was me and my friend, and we overheard the conversations of us talking about it before the film started, and you could see the other people looking a little bit lost in the screen, but then the film came on and the reaction was insane. For like 15 people watching the film and that much laughter. Like people literally braying with laughter. And that's the thing that I loved about this film so much, is that I'm self-aware enough and I'm critical of movies and TV enough that I know when I should be bothered by by something. But for some reason, the things that typically bother me about movies and TV shows did not apply here. I thought it was really funny and I thoroughly enjoyed myself. And I think sometimes having a movie be able to take you out of your own mind enough that you can get into that place and it doesn't matter because it's that enjoyable, that's something that I really, really loved. What I didn't love, I don't know, some of the jokes didn't land for me. I think they were a little too heavy-handed with some of them, but not all of them. Most of the fourth wall breaking was really good, really successful for me. And yeah, I had a great time watching this movie. I don't know that it'll be great on repeat viewings, but as like a one-off viewing, I absolutely loved it.
That's what I'm worried about too, is the repeat viewing thing, because if I really, really love a movie, especially if it's a superhero movie, because that's like kind of my jam, I will go back to the movie theater at least once more. This one, I'm really disinclined to do that. I kind of don't want to, just because when it comes out on DVD, I want it to feel super fresh again. And I'm hoping that once I own it and watch it a couple more times, that I'm just gonna keep falling in love with it and not getting annoyed by the jokes that I can see coming.
Yeah, same actually. I think a little bit of distance between first and second viewings would be good, because the jokes were great, but once you've seen them one time, they're not as funny probably the second time around, at least until you've given yourself enough distance between viewings. And I think that's, I don't have the drive either to go back to the cinema to see it straight away. I loved it. I really, really loved it. But I don't feel like I need to go back and see it again, because I want to, like, look at stuff in the background and see more stuff, because I feel like a lot of it really came across beginning to end. And I think that's great, but I think, yeah, a little bit of distance till I see it again would be good. What about you, Caitlin and Kristen? Do you think it's going to hold up to repeat viewings, or do you think you'll wait before maybe you see it again?
I very seldom see movies more than once in the theater, so even movies that I really liked, so I can guarantee that I will not go see it a second time in the theaters. But I enjoyed it, and I'm not sure if it'll hold up. It was kind of, like you were saying, pretty superficial, which on its own can be very fun, but it doesn't really give you much to look for on second and third and fourth viewings when everything is there pretty much on first viewing. So I think it's kind of a movie I would watch again when I want to turn my brain off and not for something a little deeper, like I might when I'm rewatching Winter Soldier for the 87th time or something.
Yeah, for me, I see a lot of movies multiple times in the theater, at least in the past I have. I wouldn't go back for another viewing of Deadpool. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the experience in the theater, but I can't justify another viewing for me. Like, it's a good, fun movie, but yeah, as Caitlin and the rest of you said, like, there's not a whole lot to bring you back besides just the jokes and the funny. And because there's not something like drawing you back for that, I feel like that's why for me it's a one and done. And you know, when it comes out on DVD, I'm sure I'll watch it again, but yeah, basically I don't think I'll be going back for it again.
Yeah, and for anyone who's listening to this section who hasn't seen Deadpool yet and is just listening for a couple of spoiler free reactions before we really dig into the movie, that's not indicative of it as a film. The not wanting to go back doesn't mean it's a bad film. It was really quite good. It was really a lot of fun. But yeah, so don't let the fact that maybe it's not going to be a good film for repeat viewings put you off. Definitely go and see it if you haven't yet. But we're about to get into spoiler territory. So if you have not seen Deadpool yet, and I don't know, you subscribe to us on iTunes and this is automatically downloaded and you're like, oh no, I've made a terrible mistake, I haven't seen Deadpool yet. Turn back now, go and see it, and then you can come back and listen to us break down the rest of the film. So, last warning, guys. Okay, spoiler territory. Let's start off by talking about some of the characters, because there wasn't a massive cast of characters in this movie, and for the majority of it, it was very much centered almost exclusively on Deadpool himself. You know, I guess, duh, because it's called Deadpool, but even when you get origin stories for other characters, you will usually get a lot of time dedicated to its side characters and so on, but there was a very, like, you didn't spend a lot of time with a lot of the side characters. It was very limited. But what you did get a lot of the time, for me, I thought was really successful. But let's talk about Wade Wilson himself. Obviously, we're introduced to him in the opening sequence, which we saw like a fair amount of in some of the trailers, in little bits and pieces cut together, but not in its entirety. There were some little surprising bits in there that I quite liked as we got it all cut together. But how successfully did you feel they introduced him? Because we obviously, unlike some other superhero movies, we don't get this told in like a linear narrative. We don't see him start off as Wade Wilson. We're not introduced to him as Wade prior to getting his powers and then move through the story in a linear way. We flash back and forth. Personally, I loved that approach. I thought it was a really interesting take on it, especially because Deadpool breaks the fourth wall so much and he's quite self-referential and he knows other things. So I thought it was quite interesting that they did a non-linear narrative with him jumping back and forth. But what about you guys? How did you feel getting him pretty much as Deadpool straight away and seeing him in action and then going back and seeing him prior to being Deadpool? Karen?
This was actually one of the things that did not work for me. Not saying that it wasn't necessary, because I think because he breaks the fourth wall and because he is so self-referential, that they kind of needed this in order to bring that about, and it allowed for a lot of the jokes. But my issue, it's kind of superficial, because I really hated seeing that bridge scene broken up so much with the backstory and all of these flashbacks and stuff. It really broke up the action for me, and that was one of the things that I was really looking forward to. So I wanted a start to finish huge action scene on the bridge, and we didn't get that because we kept going back to his past. At the same time, I think it was really smart to introduce Deadpool in the beginning and then go back to Wade Wilson and figure out, you know, how this actually came about. But it didn't land great for me, but I also am not sure how else they could have done it and made it work as well as it actually did.
Kristen, how about for you?
Yeah, again, it worked. I like meeting Deadpool right off the bat, but I think what was problematic for me, especially with the nonlinear thing, was I think we went back and forth a little too much. If they had cut away from the bridge scene and then gone back to it and finished it, it may have worked better for me. But the fact that we left it more than once and came back to it at least two or three times, for me, that I think was the departure. It just, something about that, I knew where we were going, I knew what was happening, but it didn't draw me in as much as I was hoping. So I think that might have just kind of been hard to fully feel immersed in the Deadpool world when you're being thrown back and forth between him and Wade Wilson's past. Like, that for me just made it kind of hard.
Do you agree with that, Caitlin, or how did you feel about it?
I felt like it was a good tool for this movie. I don't think it would work particularly well for most movies, but because Deadpool is such a unique character and this movie is so different, it kind of gives you an immediate impression. If the amazing opening credits didn't give you this idea that it was going to be a very different kind of movie, and that you weren't just going to have the traditional origin story of a superhero and then whatever first mission as a superhero story, because that's not the kind of character he necessarily is. And I feel like giving us some of Deadpool first tells us, wait, he's kind of strange and breaking the fourth wall. What is going on here? And then moving back, and it says, this is the kind of movie you're getting. So I feel like it only works in this movie, but not probably wouldn't work in a more straightforward superhero movie.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think it was a very successful tool for Deadpool. I don't know if it's because I'm so used to his comics jumping around quite a lot and him basically whiplashing about so much that it felt really natural for me that this is what they did. So I kind of really enjoyed it and getting it like kind of cut down and broken down into bits and him like going back and forth and referencing other things that happened, like telling his story in the middle of a battle. Like, I really thought that was great, but... yeah, I don't know. I love, though, that we got him as Deadpool right off the bat, because that's the one thing with a lot of these movies, and this movie has been so hotly anticipated, that I think if they'd waited too long to introduce him as Deadpool in his suit, all suited up and doing his thing, that it may have been a very, very different film, because I don't think it would have worked as well for me. Like, I think getting that out of the way and having it start off with this huge sort of bang, essentially, was really successful for this film.
That's actually one of the things that I was really worried about going into it, was how long do we have to be with Wade Wilson before we get Deadpool? So the fact that they did start him off that way and we got that version of his personality was, like you said, a really smart move.
Yeah, and I mean, his character in general, like just the way that he interacted with everyone, he had such great chemistry with every single character in this movie, whether they were an antagonist or whether they were on his side. Like, there was just so much joy throughout this film of him interacting with people. And I think this was one thing that I knew going in, is that Ryan Reynolds loves this character. What they did in X-Men Origins, Wolverine, was so far and away from who Deadpool actually was, and you can see how much thought they've put into this film and how Wade Wilson and how Deadpool interacts with the people around him. And I really just, start to finish, him as a character was so successful in everything he was doing, and I can't think of a better way that this film could have gone down with him as a character. So, with him interacting with all of the different characters, how did you feel when we flashback and got him as Wade Wilson and we were introduced to Vanessa and his relationship with her? Was that what you were expecting between those two? Was that the kind of relationship you thought they were going to introduce? Or was it a little bit different than you thought from all of the marketing? Or did it kind of meet all of your expectations of those two? Karen?
I think it definitely met my expectations. I didn't really know much about her going into it, but I figured, given the type of person that I knew Wade was, she was going to be kind of a spitfire too. And I actually really enjoyed their relationship. Like, how it began, I thought was just so, like, it's not necessarily romantic, but in their own way, it's super romantic. And she's just, you know, he says it in the film, like, her crazy matches his crazy, and they fit so well together. And I liked that she wasn't afraid to be herself. And it wasn't ever this question of, you know, whether they should be together or anything like that. They just worked despite everything. And seeing that relationship and their devotion to each other was really cool.
How about you, Caitlin? How did you feel about our introduction to Vanessa and their relationship?
I liked it, but the way that they flashed forward straight through sex scenes, it was kind of unclear to me for a while that they actually were having like a genuine relationship and weren't just hooking up one day a week for a while until we got to that he was like proposing to her. So I was like, oh, this is more than like a booty call relationship. This is an actual relationship. And that I thought was maybe slightly less successful, though in hindsight, I get it. But at the time, it was a little confusing for me.
How about you, Kristen?
Yeah, like Karen, I didn't know a whole lot about their relationship. I didn't really have expectations going into it. So I was just, you know, there to see how it unfolded. And it was really fun. Yeah, like, especially for how, you know, tragically in, I'm doing air quotes right now, it kind of ends for them midway through the movie. You don't necessarily expect it to be quite as much fun, but it really was. And the sex montage didn't bother me. Maybe it's because I read enough romance that just seemed fitting. I don't even know. But yeah, it didn't really set me off. I thought they just seemed genuine, and it seemed like a lot of fun, and that's what I would expect from Wade Wilson, especially with someone as intense as Vanessa. So yeah, it worked for me.
Yeah, it worked for me as well. And the thing that I really loved about these two together, and you see it through when you see Vanessa later in the movie as well, is that they don't expect either one of them to change in this relationship. Like, you get a very strong conflict in stories like this a lot of the time is, if someone is on Vanessa's part, she works as a stripper, but she... she also works as more than a stripper. But Wade is a mercenary as well. He is essentially someone, he's an assassin as well. And the fact that in a typical story like this, you would get one or both of them trying to change the other, and you didn't get that. They were just like, yeah, okay, that's just who we are and we'll make it work kind of thing. That was so good for me, because for both of those characters, it was such a great direction to go in with them, because that would have fundamentally changed each person as they were. And there was no shaming of Vanessa for what she did, and there was no shaming of Wade for what he's chosen as his profession. And I really like that, you know, they both allowed the other to make their own choices like that. And I just, that was so refreshing. It was something I wasn't entirely expecting, honestly, going into it, that they would just continue doing what they're doing and we wouldn't see any conflict around that. But it really worked for me. So as we kind of sort of touched on about midway through, they obviously, I wouldn't necessarily, they break up because Wade finds out that he's got cancer and he doesn't want Vanessa to watch him dying, essentially. So he kind of pieces out into this, what is told to him as a government program to give people superpowers, but actually has nothing to do with the government at all. It's a really shady operation that is making super slaves rather than superheroes, as they did it. So they break up because Wade leaves. She obviously thinks that he's dead, but he goes into this program to basically cure his cancer. That's what he's there for. And how did you enjoy this kind of origins of how he got his powers? Like, did you like the way that they handled it? Because obviously it was really horrific on certain levels, but how successful did you think this little flashback to his, basically the experimentation on him, and obviously the introduction of Ajax and Angel Dust as well? Did you think this part of the movie was particularly successful? Kristen?
It was successful. The only issue I had with it was hard to understand how time was passing during all of this. Like, was this, you know, taking place over a week, a month, a year? I had trouble like trying to place that, especially later when has made it through and after the fire and all of that, and he goes and back to find Vanessa, and it was hard for me to understand where her headspace would have been, because I didn't know exactly how long he had been gone, because like, as we all know, like, cancer is not necessarily like instant, you know, he leaves and he dies. Like, she knew he wasn't, you know, going to last long or whatever, but I had no idea where she would have been. So for me, I wish they would have been able to like give us a better passage of time, like something to mark the days or mark the months or whatever. But other than that, like the actual like process of it, it came across like you saw and understood just how absolutely horrible it was and what he went through. So it does inform you as to a lot of what makes Deadpool Deadpool. And so I definitely liked that part of it.
Karen, how about you?
I totally agree with the time thing. I mean, I didn't realize until the end of the movie that it had been like 2 years or something that he had been doing all of this stuff. And that was pretty crazy. But I didn't necessarily think too much about that until later on. In the moment, I hate to say enjoyed this like montage because it was horrific, but it really gave you an idea of what happened to him, how he came about, and what sort of mindset he has right now. Because Deadpool in the comics, especially, like, he's actually insane. He is a crazy person. And the movie did a really good job of showing all the kinds of torture that he had. And they say, you know, nobody leaves here with a sense of humor. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, of course, like, Wade will definitely, like, this is sort of his thing. And now I'm like, wow, I'm surprised even he did because of everything he went through. And it sets up a lot of his personality and his hatred of Ajax especially. And so I think that this was definitely like one of those necessary things that was really difficult to watch, but in the end, like played out really well for the story.
Caitlin, how about you?
I have a hard time saying I liked this because it was so horrific. I just sort of like imagine having to spend days like almost passing out from lack of air and then getting air again. Like that just made me lightheaded thinking about it. But I don't know. I keep coming back to Francis and how much of a flat character he is and how, like, this is our introduction to him and he's just really, like, psychotic through the whole thing, and that's like his entire character, which, I mean, I guess it's a comic book series, so whatever, but I sort of would have liked more insight into his involvement and what he was getting from it besides getting his rocks off from torturing other people, because he's a very flat character, and I do think there could have been a little more there, but I do think it did good things for helping us understand Wade's real drive to get revenge against him at the end, because it was such a horrific experience.
I think what I really liked about this Wade and Ajax thing, though, particularly, is that we're so used to, in superhero movies now, that whoever they introduce as the villain, they have goals that are much bigger than what we got in this film. It's like, take over the world, take over the universe, wipe out humanity with a rock. You know, it's so grandiose and kind of larger than just the small set of characters. They have to fight against something much bigger than them. But what I loved about Wade versus Ajax was that it was so personal. Like, this was just a guy who is involved with an experimentation on people that is, he's there to create super slaves and basically sell them off, get rich, and get off with torturing people. Like, that is his MO. That is his goal. That's what he wants. That's all he wants. That's what he wants to do. And the fact that it was incredibly personal between the two of them, that was something that I found really quite successful in kind of centralizing this movie on it being just a simple revenge mission. And it's not even so much revenge on a bottom line, it's Wade trying to get to a point where he can get his dashing good looks back. Because that was his eventual goal, was to get Ajax to fix him, because Ajax had said that, you know, there was a way to do it, when obviously he was just messing with Wade. Like, there was no way to turn him back to how he was before the horrible, horrible torture he was put through that literally destroyed, brought out his mutation, but kind of destroyed his whole body and disfigured him. And for me, that was actually, as much as we didn't get to learn a lot about Ajax, I found the fact that they kind of boiled it down to a much more personal storyline a lot more successful than like, for example, getting those ones where we have AI robots that have taken over and are trying to destroy the whole world. Like, I like that better.
I agree that it's good, it worked well, that it was a small scale thing. Like, that was something I really liked about Ant-Man, that it was such like a not a big deal at the end of the day in comparison to other films in the MCU it was fitting into. But I think that if you are going to boil it down to dude versus dude, you have to have insight into both of them. And I think it falls flat a little bit when one of the characters is just this cardboard cutout of a psychotic dude. And I think when it's a personal thing, you need a little bit more of a rounded character on both sides.
See, and I realize that this is jumping into, like, Ajax a little ahead of schedule, but I kind of took that as that being the point. Like, his powers is that he's numb to everything. He's bored all the time. He doesn't really care. He doesn't feel anything. And so him being that flat felt very purposeful to me. Maybe it didn't work. Like, that's totally a thing, but I definitely think it was on purpose.
Kristen, how about you? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I can't imagine how they would have given us better insight into Ajax with the way they portrayed him. You know, I agree with all of the like numbness and the muted emotion from him, because that's how he exists. That's how his world functions. I can't see where we would have gotten like what his drive is for what he does, because I think a lot of what his drive is, you know, according to what I saw, is that he doesn't feel. So watching everyone else go through these torturous, painful things is how he like gets feeling out, you know, like that's how he exists in this world. And so as much as, yeah, I would have liked him to be a little more three-dimensional, because Caitlin's exactly right. Like, he's 2D. You don't see much of him. I can't see where they could have expanded and given us more without hurting either Wade's character by making Ajax too big, or hurting our impression of Ajax, which they clearly wanted us to have.
Yeah, I'll agree with that it makes a lot of sense for him to have been numb in feeling as well as in a physical sense. So that, I hadn't actually considered that as a thing, but that, yeah, that actually does make a lot of sense to me, that is kind of a purposeful direction that they would have taken it in. Huh. See? You always learn things when you have other people on the show. we obviously see Ajax and Wade team up with different people as they kind of start, or as Wade starts going on his mission to regain himself or his body prior to Ajax's experimentations. And we're introduced to two members of the X-Men, or an X-Man and his kind of protege. We are introduced to Colossus, who we have seen previously in an X-Men movie, but this is a we've seen a version of Colossus that may or may not have been successful prior to this movie. And obviously his protege, Negasonic Teenage Warhead, who has the greatest name ever, and Wade would agree with us. But we're introduced to them. They want Deadpool to join the X-Men and give up his kind of extremely violent, vigilante, revenge-based ways. And I just really loved the butting heads kind of thing that they had going on. I really loved Colossus a lot. I think this is the most successful adaptation that they've done of him. Because from the comic books, like, the his personality was spot on. His kind of telling Wade off for his language and trying to, like, lecture him and trying to, like, bring him in. Like, that's so him that I was blown away with just how well they got him across in this movie. But how did you guys feel about them? Were you expecting that they were going to team up in the traditional sense? Were you expecting the kind of slightly antagonistic beginnings of it in that big bridge battle where it's him versus Colossus with that ridiculous Deadpool punching him over and over again?
Oh my god, I couldn't breathe during that when he did the T-Rex thing. I was dying.
I love that, but just his whole reaction through that, all the way up to him being handcuffed and dragged away, and he's like, "Have you seen 127 hours?" God. Spoiler alert! And I was losing it. I thought that was so funny.
I actually have a lot of feelings about Colossus. One, because he looked phenomenal. I mean, compared to the version that we've seen before, this is just above and beyond. When you compare it to the comics, it's nearly identical. And he looked great. And his voice was great. And his presence was great. I really like him as a character because he is this huge, hulking man made of metal, and yet he is so kind, and it's just, it's a testament to, you know, you don't have to be this person that you appear to be kind of thing. And he's perfect fodder for a Deadpool movie because Wade is nothing like them. They are completely, like, the most opposite people you can imagine. And them butting heads added another dimension to the movie that I guess I was expecting, because we got that scene on the bridge in the trailer when he was like, "Don't bring your X-Men bullshit around here," and that sort of thing. And that was really great. But they fleshed out Colossus a lot more than I thought they would. And it was really nice to see. And now, like, I need more of him. He's a really interesting character, and I hope we continue to see him.
Yeah, well, I kind of really thought was funny in the way that he was reacting to Wade was that it felt almost like a subtler fourth wall break in respect to the fact that you had a lot of people complaining we weren't getting a PG-13 version of Deadpool. And I thought it was just really funny that we have a character within the universe who's trying to reel him in and not necessarily censor him, but kind of tone him down a little bit. And I thought that was quite funny on, like, a meta level kind of thing. Caitlin, how about you? How was Colossus for you?
I have very few Colossus feels. Sorry. Like, he was fine. He just kind of seemed like an X-Men reject, so I just kind of didn't care all that much.
Oh my god!
I mean, it was what, like, Deadpool says, like, "This house is so big, but you're the only two I ever see. I wonder why that is." Like, you get left behind. So, like, I sort of felt like you're rejects and you're the only ones they could afford for this movie, like Wade says. So why do I care all that much? I don't. So I genuinely did not have very many feelings about either of the two X-Men characters.
Aww.
Sorry. They just were there. I laughed a few times, but mostly just did not care.
Kristen, how about you?
I mean, I appreciated all of the in X-Men jokes. Like, I'm not a huge comic book reader, but I absolutely love comic book movies. So I've seen almost all of them from what I can remember. And just getting some of the in jokes to the movies that have come before was a lot of fun for me, especially, like, visiting the mansion was just, for me, it was kind of a highlight because it was just good fun to see Deadpool there. Like, I didn't think we'd get it. They were a good, fun pair. I didn't have a whole lot of feelings about them, but I thought they were really fun, and I enjoyed their play with Deadpool because it was really, really great. And I loved Colossus's like final battle. That was all really, really amazing and just really fun to watch.
Yeah, I really like that whole final battle, actually, with everyone.
Yeah.
Danya, how did you feel about them changing Negasonic Teenage Warhead's powers into basically somebody else's?
I didn't. For what they were doing with her, I thought it worked. Like, for in respect to how they needed this movie to work, I was fine with that, because I really kind of liked just her in general as, like, this sullen kind of teenager character who's very sort of apathetic and kind of just standing there and kind of going along. I didn't... This is my thing with, like, adaptions and stuff, is that I don't mind when they change something if it serves the story in a really interesting way. And as long as it keeps, like, the heart of who the characters actually are, if you try and combine two characters or try and kind of change things up a little bit, I don't really have that much of an issue with it, honestly. Because I just think she worked as a character completely. And I know that I've seen a lot of people online with her and with Angel Dust as well, saying that they feel like they didn't have a lot to say or to contribute, but I kind of feel like if they'd have gone in a different direction with Negasonic Teenage Warhead in particular, they'd have done this differently, if they'd have given her more lines, I don't think... This sounds really stupid. I don't think she would have been as successful as a character, because I think the comedic timing with her as a character worked so well with them having her say as little as possible, because she did so much facial and body acting with it. But I don't know. I had no problems with that. I think it worked, and it obviously worked in respect to the final battle as well, because they needed to be able to get Wade up. And I kind of like the idea that she's quite small, quiet, and sullen, and she's got this huge explosive power that's really kind of forceful. I kind of just like the juxtaposition of that. I thought it was really successful, personally. But what about you?
I didn't mind it either, actually. I had done a whole bunch of research prior to the movie on the different characters for an article that you helped me tremendously with on Hyperbole. And so I got a good like who these characters were supposed to be. And I think you're right. Like, it's a shame that, you know, they had to change something from the comic book just because they are adapting the comic book, and you always want any adaptation to be as true to life as possible. However, this character works so well in the movie that I love her just the way she is. And I think everything that you've said about her is, you know, part of why I loved her so much. And her power is just kick ass in the movie, and it looked so amazing. So I'm down with that. I'm probably more, not upset, but disappointed in Angel Dust, because from what I was reading in the comics, she's not really a bad guy. And she goes through some stuff and maybe makes some poor decisions and stuff, but essentially she's one of the good guys, and she above everybody else felt very flat to me and one-dimensional and, well, two-dimensional, and I don't know. It wasn't...
Oh, yeah.
I have a theory for why they did that with Angel Dust, and I'm sure that someone is going to get mad at me for this, but... Gina Carano is a terrible actress. She is awful. She's so bad. She is, for me, on a level as an actress as Ronda Rousey, which people will have heard my opinions about Ronda Rousey as an actress. Like, I think she's great outside of acting at what she does, but they are not very good. I imagine that potentially she did have more lines, and they maybe decided to cut them down a little bit. Because her line delivery, if you've seen her in anything else, is wooden. And that's being kind.
So maybe they should have cast somebody who can act?
Yeah, well, I don't know how some of these people get the roles that they do in films. I really don't. But I... as much as I'm disappointed, and this is the thing that I was saying at the top of the episode, where I was like, I'm very aware that I should have been mad at certain things as someone who's critical of TV and film and should be looking at it in this way. I fully aware that I should be mad about the fact that they didn't flesh out Angel Dust and use her to her full potential. But on the other hand, I'm really not that disappointed that I didn't hear more Gina Carano with lines, in respect to lines, because she's just not, she doesn't sell them for me in like anything I've seen her in. So I wasn't overly disappointed that her role was more physical brute strength than anything else.
She has a presence, and I think she brings that presence to the character. I mean, she's solid and she can throw a punch, obviously.
Yeah.
So I didn't mind like her and her look, but I guess I wanted it to be more of like, more, not necessarily background, but maybe like her allegiances are swaying or something, like anything. But we really only got her as like this brute strength character, which, you know, maybe that's just what the movie needed and it's fine. But yeah, I think you're probably onto something there with the acting.
And I'm sure that her physicality and being able to take on, you know, all of the fighting and stuff that she did in this was probably a huge reason why she was cast for it, is that they knew she could handle it without having to go through months and months of prep and all of that. So I can imagine that's probably why you saw her in this role. But I agree, like, she's not the best actress. So that, yeah, I definitely see what you mean, Danya. Like, I can see why they may have had to cut her down a little more than maybe initially thought.
Yeah, it's disappointing when, at least for me, you could take either of Ajax and Angel Dust and put anybody else, any other villain in that role, and nothing would have changed. And that's why the 2D does not work for me on either end.
Yeah, but I will say that I really enjoyed her fight with Colossus at the end. I loved the way that he reacted to her and that she kind of turned tables on him a lot, because of his gentler nature. It made me laugh so much. But I did also kind of like the fact that Colossus also carried both of them, both her and it was an Negasonic Teenage Warhead he carried out as well, wasn't it? And they carried them both out at the end as well. Like, I thought that was quite interesting, because obviously that sets up that she could potentially, because in the comics, like Karen said, she's not necessarily a bad guy. She's on like a team that kind of treads a line, like a morally gray line. She like in the middle of everything. They're not necessarily the X-Men, but they're not bad guys either. They're just kind of in the middle. And I think it sets it up interestingly that she could join an ensemble cast maybe later, maybe in X-Force or something later on. So I thought that was quite interesting that we could see a continuation of that character when we get the very obvious sequel that is definitely going to happen. But let's talk a little bit more about the final battle. So essentially everything that this film builds up to is Wade versus Ajax. And why do we get to where we are? Well, because Ajax figures out that Wade has a weak spot. That weak spot is Vanessa, and he goes in, takes Vanessa, and uses her to draw Wade out so that they can kind of get the upper hand on him. And obviously, he brings in Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead because Ajax has Angel Dust and a load of sort of mercenaries to fight alongside him. And this final battle was so impressive, like, visually. I thought it was really, really well choreographed, and just the, because we had the joke where Wade keeps calling him Francis all the time, all the way through, and him taking out all of those soldiers and then posing them into his name,
spelling out Francis
as the
god.
That was such a great moment for me, because it was a joke that they'd kept they kept coming back to through the movie, and the payoff was so good at the end, because you kind of could figure out, vaguely, I kind of figured it out as he was taking out a couple more of the people. I was like, wait, is he gonna, and then they panned out and it spelled Francis, and I was losing it in the cinema. But I know that Caitlin has some thoughts about Vanessa's role in particular in this final section of the movie. So I'm going to let her talk about that first.
Okay, I'm really coming off negative in this, and I actually really liked this movie. But my big issue here was that, like, we're going back to that same old tired trope of let's go take the male hero's female weak spot and use it against him because she's a helpless girl, like, drove me nuts. And I think what bothers me so much about that, and I think this also ties into my issues with Ajax, is that the movie was playing so much with other tropes and really undermining them and flipping them. So having other tropes that are annoying and problematic and then just sticking with them when they've been playing with other ones feels disingenuous. It doesn't work for me. Like, if you're gonna play with the tropes, like, play with the ones that really are problematic, like kidnapping the girl to cause the guy pain. Like, that's a really bad trope and it needs to die. And this would have been the perfect opportunity to play with it. And I don't feel like they did anything like that. And I would have enjoyed it a lot more if they had done something to flip that. And instead it felt way too traditional in that problematic trope. That's what I didn't like.
Karen, do you have any thoughts on this?
I agree with that to an extent, because you're right. The whole, like, kidnapping the girl, the weak spot thing, yeah, it's been done a million times before, and I don't like it either. However, I did really like how, in a lot of ways, Vanessa saved herself in the end. Like, she, of course, had help, but she got herself out of that. And even after she was quote-unquote saved, like, she's pissed off at Wade, and it wasn't this, like, swooning, she falls in his arms, oh my god, I love you, you're alive, everything's going to be perfect now thing, until they kind of talk it out a little bit, and she gets, you know, angry, and she yells and stuff like that. So I think that in some small ways, they did attempt to flip that trope a little bit, and for me, honestly, like, it just worked. And I think that this is something that we've kind of come to the conclusion to, like, yeah, there are things about this movie that should have bothered us or did bother us, but kind of in the end, it didn't matter. Like, it was just fun and it was different and it was good anyway. And so that just didn't really stick out to me.
Yeah, for me, I agree with Karen on this one, is that I recognize that that is a trope that I have major problems with, and I have talked about it a lot throughout this entire podcast since we started it. It is a trope that I have problems with. However, in that battle, she basically turns the tide back in Deadpool's favor. Like, yeah, okay, it's him throwing the katana that kind of breaks the air and allows it to go back into the container, but she uses that then to break herself out, get out. Then she takes the katana and then, heedless, goes after Ajax. So I kind of like that, even though that situation is something that she's not been in before, because she's not the mercenary here. She's that's not her role. She still threw herself into, like, trying to kick his ass regardless. And I really like that about her, that she kind of just, she turned the tide of the battle back in Deadpool's favor while he was incapacitated. Because, I mean, realistically speaking, if she hadn't freed herself, that battle would have gone very differently.
I see that, but for me, it's that we had to go there at all in the first place, that we even got to that point where we're having to go, well, there's this part that's kind of sort of okay about it. Like, did we even need to get to that point at all? And then she's there, like, in her stripper outfit, which, like, I was just cringing for the entire thing, pretty much. It really pulled me out of the movie.
Well, I also feel like she is not the kind of girl who's just going to let herself be taken. Like, she's not stupid, and she's not going to put herself in a situation that she can't handle. So how the hell was he even able to kidnap her, first of all? And second of all, I do agree with Caitlin. I feel like there are a lot of ways they could have used her as Wade's, like, as the thing that Wade is there to quote unquote save without making her the helpless female in a box. Like, there are so many other ways they could have put her in danger without her just being this thing waiting to be saved. And that did kind of bother me. I did, you know, I agree with Karen and Danya that they did do things to make her a little more active after the fact. But the whole idea that she is, like, we got this, all of this proof early in the movie that she's not the typical love interest. Like, she's so different from a lot of these other women we've seen. And then in the end, she ends up being that, you know, quintessential taken woman and is being used against the hero, quote unquote hero. And it just, that it didn't sit quite right with me either. I feel like they could have made a stronger choice with that, but again, at least they didn't just leave her in the box the whole time.
It just kind of felt lazy, like you couldn't find a better solution than to go with the overly sexist trope and have, like, tiny little bits that make it maybe slightly less sexist, but it's still overwhelmingly sexist. Like, you could, like, you're the writers, come up with something more creative.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot that they could have done, but in terms of what we did get, it wasn't the absolute worst that it could have been. Like, at least...
It is pretty bad, but it could have been worse.
It could have been worse. Kristen said it. She could have stayed in that box the whole fight and not have broken out and literally have just been a spectator to be fought over. At least she had some agency in the fact that she managed to get herself out and got involved in the battle, even if it was only temporary, but she at least did something. Like, she could have just done nothing at all. She could have literally just been lying there waiting. I mean, they could have.
That's damning with faint praise. Like, it was pretty bad, but it could have been even worse. So let's be happy it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Like, that's the worst praise ever.
I don't know, but the thing is it didn't take me out of the movie. I'm aware that I should have more problems with this than I do. I don't know why specifically with this movie that it doesn't bother me as much as it has in other things. Like, there was something about it that I didn't feel my blood rising, like, as much. I didn't feel that rage in this movie as much as I have in other stuff. And I can't quite pinpoint exactly why. But it was just something about it in this context, in this movie in particular, that it didn't frustrate me as much as it has in other stuff.
I guess for me, the context of the movie made it worse, because this movie had the opportunity to play with the tropes far more than a more straightforward superhero film might. And that they decided to go the lazy route bothered me even more than it might, or that it did, like watching Iron Man or something.
Uh-oh, you said the I word. And you're Karen.
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking, and this is related, but kind of moving in a different direction, in that, Danya, I don't know if you know, but, like, obviously Vanessa is also copycat at some point. She has powers, and we do get an allusion to that when she says, you know, I've played a lot of roles, damsel in distress ain't one of them. And I don't know if she has her powers yet. That's something that I'm really curious about. If that scene in that box is meant to lead into that, if that was the triggering effect, or what could potentially be going on. Do we have any information about that, or any speculation as to, like, where she is in her own timeline?
No, I had no information on that at all. I didn't even see a hint beyond what you just said, that I've played a lot of roles in my life. I didn't see anything more to reference back to her role from the comics than that. That was the strongest connection. I didn't, with the box at the end, I think it was specifically being used just to suffocate her, mm-hmm. rather than the application that they used it for with Wade, which was, because he'd been injected with stuff previously. I feel like if they were going with that to trigger the mutant gene and force it out, we would have at least seen at some point that the actual act of Ajax injecting her with the serum, with the catalyst to try and trigger the mutant gene before putting her in there. So I don't necessarily think that her being in that box at the end is the catalyst for her becoming copycat, but it could also be entirely possible that she is copycat prior to meeting Wade. Like, there's really not enough for us to kind of assume that that's the case, because we didn't spend enough time with her outside of her with Wade in order to glean that. But, I mean, I've seen people banging that theory about, that it could potentially be that her being in the box may have triggered her mutant gene, but I don't know. It's a theory, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's touch on the other two characters. Oh, actually, one moment that I want to point out from the final battle. When Colossus comes over after Wade has incapacitated Ajax, and Colossus goes off on his big speech of, like, it comes down to a lot of moments, like, there are five moments, blah 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 blah, and he's like going on and on and on and on and on, and then Deadpool just, like, kills Ajax. He's like, I'm sorry, you were just going on for too long. And I was like, yeah, that was great. And then Colossus throws up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I love
Colossus so much. He's so great. This was like, they had to do that in this film, because every film has one of those inspiring messages about, you know, to be the hero and to be a good person, blah, blah, blah. And, like, of course Deadpool would just go and kill the dude, because that's Deadpool. And this actually ties into some thoughts I have about X-Force, which hopefully we'll have time to touch on. But, yeah, it was so funny, but it was just the perfect thing for the movie to do, too.
Yeah, I really, really loved that so much. we'll really briefly touch on some, they're very minor characters. So we got two other characters, Weasel and Blind Al. Weasel being someone who kind of helps, or kind of in a bar, he kind of gives Wade information. He's kind of batting against him on this Deadpool list for him dying, etc., etc. We didn't really get a lot of him, but I kind of liked his interactions with Wade regardless. Like, I thought they were still quite successful in a kind of someone who's normal and kind of out of his life a little bit, who's kind of in it with, for, like, his own interests. I kind of liked him as this kind of really, just a character to round out the cast, essentially. I thought he was quite successful in that respect. What did you guys think of Weasel?
He was funny. He had some good parts, and I liked the kind of friendship that he had with Wade. It was definitely different and interesting. He seemed, I don't know, kind of unimportant to me. He was the human aspect, which is fine, but I don't really know, like, how necessary he was. It was nice to see him, and I'm sure the, you know, huge comic book people were excited that he was in there. But other than just being, you know, a bit more comedic relief in a sea of comedic relief, he didn't really mean much to me.
He was kind of weird in that he wasn't really Wade's friend. Like, he was, like, the bartender at the bar who gets pulled in a little bit, but I didn't really get the impression that they were actually friends, which worked in some aspects because it was like, well, this is different. Usually he would be, like, the sidekick character, but really, like, he's kind of like whatever about Wade. And then I kind of thought it was funny when Wade's going off to the final battle and he's like, I'd go with you, but I don't wanna.
Yeah. I really liked that moment.
But I guess in other respects, like, it feels like maybe there was something a little bit missing because it didn't really seem like they were actually friends. So I had both yeah and eh feelings about him.
I mean, he kind of is the quote-unquote witty sidekick, but Deadpool doesn't need a witty sidekick because he's his own witty sidekick. I think I expected to see more of Weasel than we did. I don't know why, but just based on the scenes they did give us in previous trailers and, you know, sneak peeks and stuff, since they gave us, like, the reveal of Wade before the movie and what Weasel thought, I think I assumed we'd get more of, like, their interactions with things. And since we didn't, I was a little disappointed. But he served his purpose as kind of the straight man to Deadpool's funny in a lot of that, in a lot of their interactions. So, I mean, it worked.
Yeah, he's not really Wade's friend in the comic either. Like, he's out for his own interests. So if it suits him to work with Wade, he will do it. But if he has a better opportunity by working against him, then he'll also do that. He has, like, no loyalty to him at all. And that's what makes him such an interesting character for me, because Wade doesn't really have a lot of friends anyway. So I don't know. I thought it was an interesting addition to the film. But even better than that was Blind Al. Like, I loved her as Wade's roommate, pretty much.
God.
Roommate / live-in landlady. Like, just...
And the IKEA furniture.
The IKEA furniture.
Yes.
I mean, same Blind Al, same. And I can see what I'm doing with IKEA furniture, and sometimes I'll end up with, like, parts, like, bits and screws and stuff left over after I finished assembling IKEA furniture, and I'm like, well, it's standing up and it hasn't fallen apart, so clearly this can't have been important.
I liked the part where they were like going back and forth with, like, just the names of pieces of furniture.
Yes.
Like, they had an entire conversation with just the names, and I was like, this is happening right now.
I mean, tell me you haven't done something similar. Just tell me. Because I've had conversations like that with my dad, of all people, where we're talking about IKEA furniture and which stuff is the best one to buy. But it... I love that.
I don't think I could get one of the names out of my mouth.
No.
Oh, but I really love that. I just really liked her with the guns as well, and the fact that there are just guns everywhere, and she's holding the gun, and it's, it was just so great.
There's crack in the house buried with the cure to blindness.
Oh my God. It's so awful! I love it.
Like I said, you know, I did research on all of these characters ahead of time. And in the comics, like, he's actually really terrible to her mm-hmm. in a lot of gross ways. And I don't necessarily think that they would go in that direction, but I liked seeing this combative relationship where, like, they obviously care about each other in some way, but at the same time, like, both their lives just kind of suck. And so they're doing the best they can. And it was, I really want to know more about her because she's a really interesting person. And I'm hoping Deadpool 2 kind of brings her in a little bit more.
Yeah, especially because obviously he's reunited with Vanessa at the end of the movie, so you could assume potentially that he would be moving out. But at the same time, I kind of hope that he doesn't move out, that Vanessa doesn't immediately let him move back in with her, because that would be quite interesting, I think, if we still got to see more of Wade and Blind Al.
I think that he doesn't treat Blind Al differently than he would treat any other person. Yeah. Like, he's really awful, but he's really awful to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked how you got that moment as well, where he's like, was it with Angel Dust, where he's like, can I hit you? Can I not hit you? Is it more sexist to hit you or not hit you? they were very aware a lot of the time of what they were doing. But yeah, Deadpool is an equal opportunity asshole. So let's talk about this R rating. So for you guys, was it a successful use of like an R rating for a movie? Do you think that it worked particularly well here? Because I've gotten into a lot of conversations since Deadpool came out that, you know, this was exactly what I was expecting from a Deadpool movie. I think the R rating was the perfect choice for it. I think they did really, really well with it. My worry is that Fox are going to see this and other companies are going to see this as, well, all these movies should be like this. We should be making more R-rated heroes. We should be doing this with more people. But my opinion on that and conversations I've had is that no, that's not what we're taking from this. The fact that the R rating worked was because that's Deadpool. Like, I wouldn't want to see an R-rated Avengers movie. I wouldn't want to see an R-rated X-Men movie, for example. Like, that for me wouldn't work because it doesn't work with the team and the characters. It works because it's Deadpool. Are you worried that it might lead to an influx of R-rated movies for superheroes that don't necessarily warrant it because of the success that Deadpool has had in its box office, its opening weekend in the box office?
No, I'm really not, because that cuts off a huge portion of their audience. And I can't really see, like, the MCU gravitating in that direction, you know, just to pick a huge franchise, obviously. Like, they would be cutting off access to a lot of people who go to enjoy superhero movies at, like, you know, the PG-13 level. So I completely agree with you that Deadpool definitely warranted it. If they hadn't done an R rating, this movie would not have been the same. I mean, this is just what Deadpool is. I think maybe some other movies could warrant an R rating and be perfectly okay with that, like Wolverine. I mean, that tends to be a bit violent and he's pretty gruff and stuff like that. Also, I just really like Carnage. So, like, if we get more dead bodies and people dying gruesome deaths, like, I'm totally fine with that.
Okay,
but
Kyle.
I don't think... Hey, now. But I really don't think that this is going to snowball into, like, everybody trying to do it. I think some people will, and maybe it'll be successful, but not everyone.
I have something to say on the Wolverine point particularly. I think they're too late to turn Wolverine into something more R-rated. I said this prior to, like, podcasting, prior to joining Hyperball, when it was literally just me talking with friends with the possibility of, like, X-Men movies and so on. I'd always bandied about the idea that Wolverine would make a really good R-rated movie with his solo stuff, because that's kind of, he kind of toes that line of getting particularly violent and so on. I think they've written themselves into a corner in the fact that they've introduced him as a core member of the X-Men team, and we're so used to him being the way that he is with them and within the team that they've already got a pre-built audience for that character who have certain expectations of him. And now I think it's too late to break him out of that mold and push him in a direction that probably would have suited him better if they'd started off that way. So I think as much as I would love to see Wolverine and Deadpool teaming up in either X-Force or in something else, or even in Deadpool 2, seeing him in Deadpool 2, like, I think it's too late to involve him, personally, because they've already set up this expectation of who Wolverine is and how he works within the franchise already. They've already got that built-in audience for it. As much as I would love it, in respect to it's something that I would have wanted to have seen, I think they're too late to utilize it the way that it needs to be utilized.
That's what I was going to say, is that I don't think they would do this with anything that has already been established. I think they might try R-rated movies for trying to launch new franchises or heroes, but I don't think they would do it at all with anything that has already been established as a PG-13, because Deadpool is a new property. So they can establish it as, this is what this property is. It is R-rated, it's irreverent, it's violent, it's all these things. We can't completely change Captain America movies into that, because that's not what they are. But we can bring in a new hero and say this is what this new property is. So if anyone is going to do it, I imagine it would be with brand new properties trying to be introduced.
Haven't they been tossing around the idea of making Wolverine, the next Wolverine, R-rated though?
There's been rumors going around, and I think that would be a mistake because of the built-in audience. You've already got, and this has been driving me up the wall, that you've already got parents who have seen the trailers for Deadpool and are still taking their kids to see it and then walking out at the start of the film when they realize it's not a kids movie. Like, guys, it's R-rated for a reason. Did you, like, that? Really? Like, but I think with someone like Wolverine, it would be worse because he's already an established character, so there's already expectations that come along with that. So turning it into an R-rated movie now is a recipe for disaster, personally. As much as I think an R rating would be great for Wolverine because of how he works in the comic books, but I think it just... I just don't think it's the right time to be doing it. They should have done it. They should have taken the chance earlier to make that work.
See, I think Wolverine, since we already have so much of him with the origin movie and everything else, if they were going to do an R-rated movie with him, he's been built to be that character that I think they could do an R-rated movie with him now. It wouldn't be the same kind of R-rated movie. It wouldn't be this overly sexualized, like, super funny, witty thing. It would be Wolverine's R-rated movie. It would be a little more violent, a little more intense, a little darker. I think they could do it without it being too much of a departure, but I do agree you'd have a lot of misunderstanding about it. You'd have parents taking their kids to see the Wolverine movie and then being pissed that it has, you know, the darker tone. I think they could do it, and I think it would work for the character even now, but it wouldn't necessarily come over and come off as well as Deadpool is.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. What I think it would work with is keeping with the sort of Deadpool series of movies that you can move on for. So Deadpool 2 or X-Force, which Deadpool is part of that team. So I think when you... In keeping with that, I think it would work really, really well if you establish this as its own offshoot kind of series adjacent from stuff like the X-Men. But yeah, I mean, we obviously start seeing the setup for that in the after credits scene, which I also want to touch upon before we get into our feedback from some of the guys who've already seen it. I really love this after credits scene. The Ferris Bueller reference was excellent because that was kind of the first after credits scene. So it was really funny to see that reference back to. But obviously during this, Deadpool and he announces that Cable is going to be in the sequel. They haven't cast him yet, but he does have some suggestions. Doesn't he, Karen?
Yes, he does. Would you like me to talk about Cable?
I would. You worked so hard on this hypeful article about the Cable casting. I feel like it should be your thing.
Thank you. Yes, another article in which I sent Dania about 1,000 questions. She's my comic book expert / guru, what can I say? But I did read up on Cable, and he's actually a really interesting character in that he is the son of Madeline Pryor, who is a clone of Jean Grey and Scott Summers. He was sent to the future and came back this sort of like battle-hardened warrior. And he has telekinetic and telepathic powers, and he can also travel through time. And he kind of is like this cyborg dude. He has like a mechanical arm and an eye, and it's a whole thing. One of the really interesting things about him is that he is super, super powerful. Like, I was reading some things where some of the creators – And some of the people who have worked around this character is like, maybe he's too powerful because he can do a lot of things. And it's almost like he just cannot be defeated. He is a good guy, though, which is definitely a plus. But the problem here is that he wants, more than anything, world peace. He just wants everybody to work together. But he's also willing to do some really strange things to get to that end.
Strange things is a good way of putting.
He, like, at one point, he makes himself the savior and has everybody sort of, like, bow down to him and forces them into world peace, which kind of sounds good, but also kind of sounds like giant evil dictator. So that's strange. And one of the other main things he does is he's willing to make himself the enemy of basically all of Earth. Like, he is the bad guy. And as long as that means everybody is working together against him, he's happy. So he's a little twisted.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. He's such a good character, though, especially when you play him off Deadpool. Like, in the comics, yeah. It's such a good team-up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that, like, his story with Deadpool is a really big one. Like, fans really like it. It ended up getting canceled, but it still has this, like, basically cult following to it. And he is the straight man to Deadpool's just wacky Joker. And it works really well. And they end up becoming, friends, kind of associates. Like, they work together. At one point, Cable has to absorb Deadpool and then, like, throw him back up. This is comic book, guys. It works in the comics. And they end up, like, Deadpool ends up getting part of his time-traveling capabilities. And then whenever one of them uses it, the other one comes along. So they kind of have this buddy cop duo where they kind of can't get rid of each other. And people just really love the team up. And so I think them introducing Cable to Deadpool 2 is going to be really big and hopefully bring in even more people who maybe were hesitant on the origin story.
Yeah. If like Caitlin, you weren't familiar with Cable and you weren't sure about, if you've seen the buzz about Punisher joining Daredevil, it's on that level of fan crazy for bringing in Cable with Deadpool. Like, that's kind of the best way to kind of put it into perspective for how crazy people are gonna, like, the fans are gonna go for Cable coming into this universe with Deadpool. Like, I was at New York Comic Con when they showed the first bits of Punisher in the trailer, and it was deafening. Like, the whole room was literally screaming. Like, that's Cable and Deadpool. Like, it's equivalent to that. So yeah, it's a big deal basically that they are going to be introducing this character into this, I keep saying, potential sequel. They're working on the script, but it's almost certainly gonna get greenlit completely. But right, is there anything else you want to add before we get into feedback?
Yes.
Oh, do you want to talk about X-Force?
I do, just really quickly.
Go.
How about you explain X-Force? Because, like, gosh, I have a very basic idea, but give us a little background before I get into my concerns.
I guess think about X-Force as the more violent X-Men. So they do a lot of similar stuff in respect to the people they come up against, but they are a lot more militant. They are a lot more aggressive. They are willing to do things that are outside of the remit of what the X-Men are willing to do. So the X-Men are kind of a little bit more moral. They have stronger ideals when it comes down to it, but the X-Force will be willing to kind of go a little bit crazy, and its first leader was Cable. So basically, take everything that Karen said about Cable and make him a leader of a team. with Deadpool involved there. And that'll probably tell you a lot about their approach to how they work as a team.
My concern with a possible X-Force movie is how can you stay so true to Deadpool and stay true to the X-Men universe that we already have? I realize that this is going to be a different team, but Deadpool is so different and so off the wall that I don't want them to bring Deadpool down to the other X-Men level in order to make this movie work.
I think it'll go the other way. I think that if they're gonna go with another big R-rated movie, this is gonna be the one that they'll do, other than Deadpool.
But then you have the concern of making the other X-Men look ridiculous.
This is the thing, in the comics it works in the same way. The X-Men, by nature, aren't necessarily in the comics very violent. So, essentially, the X-Force are kind of the people who are willing to do what the X-Men won't do. And they'd have to do it in a really sensitive way, in the fact that the X-Men will need to be aware that they are working as a team. But again, it's the same way that Cable would work, because he's connected so closely to the X-Men anyway, but he's very, very aggressive and off the wall and very, very violent.
Sounds kind of Suicide Squad-y.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was getting to.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, yeah, think of it as the Suicide Squad, essentially, but in the Marvel universe.
And they're doing Suicide Squad.
Unfortunately.
We will see how that goes.
Sorry. Jared Leto did some stuff today that basically made me want to put my head through a wall, so I'm like, I'm not in the right headspace for Suicide Squad today.
Oh god.
Oh dear, Jared Leto. Why do you do what you do? But yeah, think of it in those regards. I guess it would work the same way the Suicide Squad is going to work within the DC universe. So, even though they're not really going R-rated with that either, but... right. Feedback. We got a couple of people who have seen the movie and gave us their thoughts on it. So, let's see. Karen, do you want to get Cassie's comment?
Yes. She says, Deadpool was awesome, but I don't think he can hold up to repeat viewings. I saw opening weekend, no regrets, and I urge everyone to see it, but I can't see myself going back multiple times like I did with Guardians of the Galaxy and The Force Awakens. Loved it, though. We pretty much touched on this already and pretty much agree.
Yeah. Kristen, do you want to get Gwendolyn's?
Sure. She says, I watched the German dubbed version and it was good, but the jokes didn't really work for me. Then I finally had the chance to watch it in English and it was so much better. I know this is a non-US/UK problem, but I thought I'd share. Dubbing sucks.
See, I think that's really interesting that viewing it in a different language will change the film completely. Because I know Selena, who we've had on the podcast before, has said the same when she's seen films and they've dubbed it. We've had chats about this before, that it can really change how the film lands. And when she's watched it in English, then it completely changes how she sees the movie. So I think this is really, really interesting that it doesn't, like, the jokes don't really work as well when you translate it into a different language. Like, languages is such a fascinating thing for me anyway. I could talk about it for a very, very long time, but I won't.
Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with just, like, Ryan Reynolds and his Deadpool voice is so good that if you're not hearing that, it's a problem.
Caitlin, do you want to get Stephanie's?
Yes, Stephanie says, I kind of wish Sony sold Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield. I assume the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, not Andrew Garfield himself. To Fox, because Spidey-pool, but I'm accustomed to not having nice things.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Spidey-pool would, like, I would lose it if that became a thing.
I literally just learned about this, and am concerned, but intrigued.
They have a new series in the comics going on at the moment with Spider-Man and Deadpool. Okay, going over it really, really quickly, they get tied up together, and Deadpool has a very specific reaction to it, and Peter is basically like, oh my god, this is the worst thing, what's going on? It's Spidey-Pool, their relationship in the comics is hilarious, because Deadpool has the biggest crush on Peter Parker, like, the biggest crush on him, and Peter's kind of like, no. But Deadpool being Deadpool still keeps his crush going. Yeah. And finally, Mai came to us and said, Deadpool was 80% amazing, 5% not my thing, and 15% trying too hard. The intro was amazing. Best fight scene was the last one with Francis. It was just mesmerizing. Would have liked more Vanessa and less jokes about what Wade looks like under the mask. Meta as fuck, and I loved it. McAvoy or Stewart, Pulverine, and special shout out to Happy International Women's Day.
The Wolverine mask when she takes his mask off.
Yes! I love that. Do you know what I also loved? The People Magazine Sexiest Man Alive cover, where you've got one with Ryan Reynolds and you've got one with Hugh Jackman as well. And shout out to the X-Men Origins Deadpool figure.
Yes! Yes, I
loved that. And the International Women's Day day moment. Yeah. I laughed a lot at that, and the person that I was seeing the film with, we both laughed a lot at that moment. We were like, yep. Right, any final thoughts before we say bye?
I promise I liked it.
We did not swear enough on this podcast.
No.
Yeah. Deadpool would be ashamed of us.
I was told that I couldn't prank call TGI Fridays in Louisville, so...
It's mean, Danya.
Right, so thank you for tuning in to this special edition episode all about Deadpool. We'll be back with our standard episode as well this week, so until you hear us then, I'm Danya.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
And we'll see you on the next episode, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.